Okay, so we are in Yeshaya, Perek Chav Bet, Isaiah chapter 22, in the Sdom Tanach. We are on page 991, the end of the chapter. Just to, again, remember where we are and what exactly it is that we're doing, because that's always, you know, a nice thing to do. We are towards the end of Yeshaya's section in which he talks about the fall of various nations, but in this perek, he's talking about the fall of Yehuda, the fall of Judea and of Yerushalayim specifically. We spent a couple of weeks talking about what Yeshaya sees the Jews of Yehuda doing wrong, how they are anticipating an invasion by Sanherib and the Assyrians, and on the one hand he criticizes them for cowardice, for going up to the roofs, for not fighting, and then on the other hand he seems to criticize them for putting their faith in their strategies of reinforcing the walls of the city and digging a moat and knocking down houses to use the building materials for the walls, and that they don't put their trust in Hashem instead. And then he shifts gears in the middle of the parak, the middle of the chapter, at sentence 15, and he starts talking to a fellow by the name of Shevna. And that's what we want to talk about in the beginning this week, is who is this man named Shevna? The way that Yeshaya describes him is that he is somebody who is far into the city, who has come into the city and created a position of power to enrich himself. And Yeshaya warns him that he will be brought low. His position officially is, he is described as Asher al-Habayit, the one in charge of the house. And we aren't sure if the house is capital H or lowercase h. Is he in charge of the Beis HaMikdash? And maybe he's even the Kohen Gadol, which would fit with the language in sentence 21, where he is described as having a ketonet and an avnet, garments which are associated with the Kohen Gadol? Or is he in charge of the palace? Asher al-Habayit means in charge of the king's house, which fits elsewhere in Tanakh, in Malachim Aleph, in Kings 1, we're not looking it up now, but in chapter 16, again in chapter 18, you find the phrase Asher al-Habayit to refer to somebody who is in charge of the king's house. Either way, whether you're the Kohen Gadol or the man in charge of the royal palace, you have a certain degree of authority and power. And so Yeshaya says to him, look at you, digging a crypt for yourself way up high. God is going to take you away. He's going to make you wander. And he says he will die in exile and shame. And then the last six sentences in the chapter, he says God is going to replace Shevna. He's going to appoint somebody named Eliakim, who is God's Eved, and give him the robes, and give him the position, and give him the keys, and everything is going to go over to Eliakim. So, in and of itself, the section is clear. Right? When you read the section itself, there's a fellow named Shevna who is giving himself some grand position and power, and that's a no-no. In general, in Yerushalayim, we don't like people who try to build themselves up and to take power for themselves. And so he's going to be lowered and he'll be replaced with this fellow Eliakim. All well and good. The problem that we have is that in chapter 36, which we should be up to in the next couple of weeks, in chapter 36, we are going to find the invasion of the Assyrians, and lo and behold, leaders of the Jews of Yerushalayim are going to come out to greet them, and one of them is going to be this fellow Shevna HaSofer. We assume Sofer means scribe, but we're going to revisit that word because it may not be here. But Shevna, who is the scribe, goes out to greet them, number one. And number two, so does Eliakim Asher al-Habayit. Eliakim, who is now in the position that Shevna occupied before. So, on the one hand, you look at that and say, well, that fits very well, right? Shevna was demoted to become a Sofer, and Eliakim is now a Asher al-Habayit. Exactly what Yeshaya said is supposed to happen. Prophecy came true. Hizkiah listened to Yeshaya, and that's what he did. The problem is, if Shevna is really supposed to suffer what's predicted here, he shouldn't be a Sofer, he should be dead. Right? He doesn't have a role. That's one problem. The second problem that we have with it in this is that here he seems to be a good guy. when you see Shemna show up in Perek Lamed Vav in chapter 36, he goes out to greet them, to greet the Assyrians as the others did. He tears his clothing when he hears the blasphemy about Yerushalayim. Like he seems to be on the good guys' team in Perek Lamed Vav. So I don't really follow what happened to Shevna, and was this really a fulfillment of Yeshaya's prophecy? So there are four different explanations that you can find for this. If you take a look at your sheets, if anyone didn't take a sheet, you definitely should now. You find Tosfot in a couple of places discuss the problem of the identity of Shevna. The first one, Tosfos in Shabbos Yud Bet Amud Bet, source number one. Shevna Ish Yerushalayim. The Gemara there talks about a fellow by the name of Shevna, who is, as described, in source number one, who is described as the man of Jerusalem. So Tosfos says, Rabbeinu Tam lo garis Shevna. Rabbeinu Tam, grandson of Rashi, did not have Shevna in his text. His text of the Gemara, there was no Shevna man of Jerusalem. Why not? Deshevna Rasha Hava. Because Shevna was a wicked man. Velo maskinan bishmei. We don't use his name. Deshem shem yirkav. Because the pasuk in Mishlei says, in Proverbs says, the name of the wicked should rot. Right? We say, Zecher tzadik livracha. We recall a tzadik for bracha. And shem shem yirkav, the name of the wicked should rot. So, therefore, if Shevna is a bad guy, which is what it sounds like in our chapter, then no one would name their kid Shevna. This is not his own invention. That's a Gemara in Yuma that talks about the classic question, which is, how is it that we use the name Yishmael? Right? There are Tanaim named Yishmael. There's a Yishmael Kohen Gadol. How in the world do you use the name Yishmael? And the Gemara says, because Yishmael did tshuva. Yishmael repents, and there's a range of evidence to support the idea that, in fact, Yishmael did tshuva, the fact that he puts Yitzhak ahead of him, in the burial of Abraham, when earlier he had challenged Yitzhak's legitimacy, is one piece of evidence. You could also note that there are two servants at the Akedah, and the Midrash assumes that that's Eliezer and Yishmael, meaning Yishmael came back. But the Gemara there says, if Yishmael had not done tshuva, we would not use his name. We wouldn't name people Yishmael. So Tosfos says that no one would name their kid Shevna, because Shevna's a bad guy. Ela garas Shachna. Dahavinami Shem Adam. The answer is the name is Shachna. Maybe Shachna. I assume Shachna, but it doesn't have to be. Because that's also a person's name. So Rabbeinu Tam takes the view that Shevna is a bad man. V'nira l'ri, however, the Ri, another of the authors of the Tosfot, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, says no. D'shaper garis Shevna. No, the name is Shevna, man of Jerusalem. D'atu im echad rasha, ushmo Abraham, lo nikra b'shem za'acher. What would you do if there were a bad man named Abraham? Now that's it. We can't name anybody Abraham anymore. The name Abraham is off the list. He says it can't be. You don't knock out a name because one person who carried that name was a bad person. I was always so confused when I was a kid. I had a great uncle named Adolf. And I was so, like, how does a Jew have that name? The answer is he had that name before. That's the Re says you don't trafe up a name because there was a bad person who had that name. That's the Re's approach, and then he says, I'll tell you what, there actually was a good Shevna. The Ashkechan detray Shevna Havu. There were actually two people named Shevna. Kemosha Mochiach v'Yeshaya dechsev Shevna Asher Alabai. It's because in our chapter we have Shevna who's in charge of the house. Uchsev Basar Hachi. And then you have chapter 36. Vayavo Elav Eliakim Asher Alabai v'Shevna HaSofer, where we're introduced to Shevna the Sofer, which we assume is a scribe. Mashma de Shevna Asher Alabai is Kvar Meis. Shevna, who was in charge of the house, is dead. V'aya Eliakim b'makomo, and Eliakim is in his place. V'shevna ha-sofer hayacher, and shevna ha-sofer is now somebody new. So the Re says, it's just coincidence, or Shevna was a popular name. But there are two people named Shevna. The one in our chapter suffers the punishment he suffers for aggrandizing himself via his position of power, one of the major sins of Yerushalayim. So he suffers what Yeshaya predicts for him here. And therefore that does away with my question of why is he still alive in chapter 36. The answer is he's not. And as for my question of how is he a good guy in 36, the answer is he's not. The one in 36 is somebody else. That's the Re's approach. He says two different Shevnas. Got it? Okay. However, I want to come back to Rabbeinu Tam. Because Rabbeinu Tam thinks they're the same person. But within that view, we have three different possibilities. The first possibility is that Shevna is indeed guilty of aggrandizing himself, and he gets demoted to become a sofer by chapter 36, which was my gut when I first read this, right? Chapter 22, he is the big man in charge. He has abused his power. Yeshaya condemns him. So he gets a demotion to be sofer. He still has a position, but it's clearly a low-level type of a position, but that's what he is in chapter 36. That would be an answer to the problem. And a simple one. Susan?
But so fair. Like, we talk about Ezra so fair, and that's not, we don't talk
correct
about being a low person.
Correct. Hang in there. That's coming next. Not next. That's the answer number four. But answer number two to what's going on with Shevna is, yes, he got demoted before chapter 36. Ah, then why is he still alive? Right? And why does he have a position of being a sofer? And why does he seem to be good in chapter 36? So in terms of why he has a position and he's still alive, I don't really know how that fits with this. In terms of how he became good, and maybe he did tshuva. And therefore he gets a position. Maybe he did tshuva. I don't know. But that would be your second approach. Your third approach is to flip the chronology. I would not dare to do this myself, but Tosfos did it, and therefore it's not my problem. We have a principle of Ein Mukdam Umeuchar BaTorah. Things in the Torah are not assumed to be in chronological order, and you can prove that. It's very easy to prove that. The best proof of it is in Parshas VaYishlach. Right? I'm sorry, VaYeshev. In Parshas VaYeshev, Yosef is sold, right? And then after the sale of Yosef, we have an interlude in which we learn about Yehuda and Tamar. And then after Yehuda and Tamar, then we come back to Yosef in the house of Potiphar's wife. Right? Well, the house of Potiphar with Potiphar's wife. In the interim, between the first part, the sale of Yosef, and Yosef in the house of Potiphar, Yehuda gets married, has three sons, marries off his oldest son, who then dies, marries off the second son, who then dies. The third son then grows up. Tamar gets tired of waiting, feels like something fishy is going on, ends up being with Yehuda, becomes pregnant, and gives birth, and then we come back to the sale of Yosef. That is quite a trick, especially when you realize Yosef is 17 years old when he is sold. Yosef is 30 when he comes before Paro, which is only after he's been in jail, right, for a couple of years. So this story here has very limited number of years for all of the business to have with Yehuda and Tamar, which is why Rashi makes the comment, the story doesn't actually belong there, it's there in order to contrast Yehuda's behavior with Yosef's behavior, and to show that since Yehuda did not save Yosef, he was demoted. It says, Vayered Yehuda me'ezechav. That's a perfect illustration of a story in the Torah which didn't occur there, but it's shifted around for reasons of the Torah wanting to tell its story a certain way. We find it also in the end of these coming parshiot when we learn about Yishmael's family before he sort of disappears from the picture. But we learn about ensuing generations. At the end of Vayishlach, you get the story of Asa's family and all the kings that they're going to have who aren't alive at this point, But again, we're just telling their story here so we can get them out of the way, so we can move on with the story of Yosef. For narrative purposes, things are out of order. The chiddush, the novelty that Tosfos introduces here, is that that happens in Tanakh, not just in Chumash. Take a look at source number two. Tosfos in Yoma, dealing with the same problem that we've been talking about, that we talked about number one, about who this Shevna is. Miu Nira, the Hakol Echad. Everything is one. What do you mean? It's all fits together. Del Kircha, Hahu Shevna Basrush, Niskaseb Basak, Kishachirev Rav Shakeb, Amazid Sancherev, Rosha Hava. The Shevna who put on sackcloth when Rav Shakeb, the Assyrian, blasphemed in that whole story with Sancherev in chapter 36, he was a wicked man. And he refers you to a Gemara in Sanhedrin that we're going to have to see. So this Shevna is a bad guy in chapter 36. Aval ein mukdamu meuchar b'Torah, but there is no order in the Torah. The Avagav dahacha kari lei sofer. Granted that he is called a sofer here, v'hacha labayit, and in the other one he's called the one in charge of the house. Al karcha hakol echad. The answer is it must be the same kedepricious as I've already explained. So the way he reads it is this: the first thing to happen between chapter 22 and 36 is chapter 36. Or to put it differently, our prophecy here about the Jews of Yerushalayim and all of that, and the criticism of Shevna, is actually about an event that we're going to read about in chapter 36. That in and of itself is not so odd, because remember, we've been jumping around with these predictions that Yeshaya is making. Some of them are about the Assyrian invasion, some of them are about Babel. In the next chapter, we'll see that one of them may be about Rome, in the second Beis HaMikdash. So it's not in and of itself so ludicrous to think that, in fact, what's going on in 22 is a prophecy related to what happens in 36, but the deal is that in chapter 36, we are introduced to this fellow Shevna, who is a sofer, but sofer is in fact a position of power. Okay, so sofer is a powerful position, and he is wicked, and that's the same thing as in 22, which is after that position of being Asher al Habayit, in charge of the house, and Hashem is now saying to him, you're going to be demoted. That's the idea. 36 precedes 22. Susan recognizes that there's a major hole in this. What is the hole?
The war, the coming, isn't
supposed to be
that.
Oh, no, that's okay. This is a prophecy about something that's going to be.
In 22.
No, the prophecy in 22 is related to the events in 36.
Right, but which came first?
36 came first, and 22 happens after 36. It's just collected here to be with all the prophecies about all the nations and their downfalls. The big hole is not that. The big hole is that in chapter 36, Eliakim is described as being Asher al Habayit. And in 22, right, the one over the house. And in 22, we said he's going to elevate Eliakim. But he already is Asher al Habayit. So that's my difficulty with this read. The last approach. So again, we're trying to understand what the deal is with Shevna and why he's around in chapter 36. Why is he apparently a good guy? And why is he occupying a position of sofer? So our first answer is there are two different Shevnas. Don't get confused, and you can just read that and then move on in the book. Approach number two is to say, nope, they're the same person. And in fact, he is demoted to become sofer. Sofer is indeed a demotion. And maybe the tshuva, and that's why he's still alive. And that's why in chapter 36 he's okay. Your third approach is to say the confusing approach, which is 36 happened before 22. And so he had his meeting with the Assyrians first, and now he's in trouble and he's going to get demoted because he's really a bad person. The nuance, then the problem is Eliakim. But okay. Your fourth solution is the most interesting. And your fourth solution is to say also, sofer does not mean scribe. Just like we just said, sofer does not mean scribe at all. And what it means instead is Talmid Chacham, scholar. Like we say when we talk about Ezra as Ezra sofer, although there are all sorts of other overtones to his involvement. involvement with scripture, so to speak. Nonetheless, the basic meaning of sofer often is that a sofer is a talmid chacham, is a sage. That's the idea, which makes sense because in chapter 36 we're going to see three people together: Eliakim Asher al Habayit, Shevna the sofer, and Yoach Hamazkir. What is a mazkir? It's a secretarial position of some kind, stenographer or something like that.
And I was thinking the sofer was the court records, kept all the records.
Yeah,
would be powerful.
Could be.
Could be.
Could be.
In other places in Tanakh, is sofer used as a Talmud Chacham?
Yes, there are other uses that can be like that. One classic is the story of Kiryat Sefer, which is conquered by Othniel ben Kenaz. There's a lot of discussion there about whether that's a spiritual conquest or a physical conquest, and they're playing on the idea that Sefer there and sofer can be a term for scholarship. As opposed, and it's a longer story. That's also Devere. There's a bigger discussion there. I mean, it's probably not the best example to give. But you also find others identified as Sofrim and Moshchim B'Shevet Sofer. I think Yisachar's descendants are identified that way in Divrei Hayamim. There are other uses that can fit that. Sorry. Right, you can take it that way, but there's another way also that it's taken. It has to do with the broader pasuk there. But yes, you could read that way. According to this read, that he is a Talmud Chacham, that this Shevna is a Talmud Chacham, his sin here is not only that he aggrandizes himself, giving himself a position of power in Yerushalayim, but that he uses that power in order to combat Chizkiyahu. He has his Talmidim, he has his students, and he rallies them against Chizkiyahu in trying to figure out policy towards the Assyrians. There's a tradition of this in the Gemara, of reading people who are mutinous in Tanakh as being great scholars of Torah who became corrupt. So one example of that is Korach, who is interpreted in the Gemara as being a Talmud Chacham, and he wants to know, Moshe, if you have a house that's full of sfarim, does it need a mezuzah, and you have a garment that's all tchelet, does it need tzitzis? And Doeg HaAdomi is another one, who the Gemara reads as being a great scholar, whose learning was only, as the Gemara puts it, min hasafa v'lachutz, from the lips and outward. Inside he was corrupt, and his scholarship was all external.
Is this two shavuot or one? The
no, there's one Shevna now.
So, well, but if it's the first one, we still have the problem that he should be dead.
So, so watch the way they read this story. Yeah.
Yeah, we have more modern times. We talk about Apikoros. You can't be an Apikoros unless you know about. In other words, isn't there?
There is such an idea, yes.
Yeah, so they would have.
But this isn't about being an Apikoros. These aren't people who are heretical. These are people who are greedy. They just want to use the power that they have to aggrandize themselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is this so complicated?
That's a good question. So this is the way that the Midrash tries to solve our problems regarding this person who on the one end is Asher al-Abayit, and on the other end is a Sofer, and who's somehow involved in the Assyrian invasion. Take a look at source number 3. The Gemara asks a question. My Kesher Rishaim. What is a Kesher Rishaim? This Gemara is in the middle of a discussion about how you make decisions and following the majority on something. And it says that if you're dealing with Kesher Rishaim, a conspiracy of the wicked, then you don't follow them. And it tells us, uses Shevna as Exhibit A. Shevna have a Darish B'Tleisar Rav Vasa. Shevna had a crowd of 130,000 students. Recognize that the way it's phrased here, 13 times 10,000, 13 is often used in the Gemara when it wants to say a large number of something. Tosus points that out. That's not my innovation. So he has 130,000 students. Chizkiyahu have a Darish B'Chatzar Rav Vasa. Chizkiyahu only had 110,000. So, well, he's outvoted. Ki asa Sancheirev v'tzara ladi Yerushalayim, when Sancheirev lays siege to Jerusalem, kasav Shevna pitzka shada v'gira. Shevna wrote a note, shot it out with an arrow, saying the following: Shevna v'siyato hishlimu. Shevna and his supporters want to make peace. Chizkiah v'siyato lo hishlimu. The problem is Chizkiah and his group. Shenamar, as the pasuk says in Tehillim, ki hine harshaim yidrechun keshet. The wicked literally step the bow. It's what you do with one of those tall bows in order to set it for shooting an arrow. You would step on the bottom of it when you pull back the string. So they've arranged the bow. Konenu chitzam al yeter. They set the arrow on the bowstring. So this is the wicked who have set up their arrows. Havakamista v'chizkiah. Chizkiah is scared. Amri said, "Demachas v'shalom natia daite the kutcher brichu basaruba." God follows the majority. Maybe God is on their side. Kaven deruba mimsiri in hunami mimsiri. Since the majority is going with it, we have to also. I added in the words in brackets, meaning what he's saying is maybe we ought to surrender. And that's why Shevna in chapter 36 is going out to greet the Assyrians. Navi lo, and the Navi comes to Chizkiyahu and says, "Lo tomrun kesher l'chol asher yomar ha'am hazeh kesher." Don't say kesher every time the nation says kesher. Meaning, the fact that they have a lot of people on their side doesn't mean that they win. Lomar kesher v'shem hu, the kesher v'shem eino min aminyan. The kesher of the wicked doesn't count. So the Gemara paints this fellow Shevna as a scholar who abuses his power to try to rival Chizkiyahu. And God is saying he's going to be brought low. But the term sofer then is not a demotion. Sofer means he is a scribe, and now to answer Susan's question of why is he still in this position, why is he in a position of power in chapter 36, the answer is he hasn't suffered anything yet. Meaning this is when he makes his move. In chapter 36 is when he makes his move towards the Assyrians. He is a sofer, meaning a Talmid Chacham. That's the way he's being described in chapter 36. I would note one thing, which I don't want to spend time on, because, Joyce, if you think it's confusing now, I spared you greater confusion. Rav Carmel has an article, which I saw online, called Kesher Rishayim Einu Min HaMinyan, trying to address something that I'm not really going to address. I'm just going to point it out. In source number three that we just read, we said Yeshaya comes along and says, don't say kesher, don't say conspiracy every time the nation says it. What chapter in Yeshaya is that from?
Eight.
Chapter 8. That was when Yeshaya was talking to King Ahaz, the generation before Chizkiyahu. He's not talking to Chizkiyahu. So Rabbi Carmel tries to come up with an explanation for what's going on here. The easy answer is that it's simply that the idea of it, don't follow the majority, right? Seen in chapter 8 when Ahaz is afraid of the nation, applies for Chizkiyahu as well. Don't be afraid of the majority. But the point here, and what I want to get across here, is that we're resolving our problems by saying it's the same Shevna in chapter 2 and chapter 36. Hashem is angry at Shevna for building himself up this way. Shevna makes his move as a sofer in chapter 36. The Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah has another version of the same idea in source number 4. They talk there about a Kohen Gadol who leads the nation astray. I'm going to work with my translation here just in the interest of time. So flip the page, you'll see my English. If the anointed priest leads the nation astray, this is Shevna, of whom it says, go come to the Sochein. The Sochein literally is the agent. However, it's also somebody who enjoys pleasure. If you think of Adila L'Sochenet with Abishag HaShunamit, Rabbi Elazar said he was the Kohen Gadol, meaning he was in charge, Asher al-Abayit, he was in charge of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yehuda said he was an officer, Asher al-Abayit, he's in charge of the king's house, the palace. In the view of Rabbi Elazar, that fits with when the Pasuk says, I will give him, Eliakim, your ketonet to wear. He had a ketonet, he was a Kohen Gadol. Whereas, the view that says he was just an officer is because it also says, I will give your authority in the hand of Eliakim, the authority over that. In the view that he was the Kohen Gadol, he took from the Karbanos for himself. That's his sin. in the view of Rabbi Yehuda Barabbi, he took the holy items that had been dedicated and used them for himself. Two different ways to read it, and then you see as the story goes on how they portray, a little bit differently from the Gemara, the betrayal that Shevna carried out. But what we're doing here again is explaining the Asher al Habayit, he's in charge of the house, versus being a Sofer. And the answer is, he wasn't demoted. Sofer just meant he's a Talmid Chacham, which is the position he occupies when he goes out to greet the Assyrians. It also fits with sentence 22 in our chapter, which talks about him having the authority to open and close the city. But what emerges from all of this, and from everything we discussed in the last half hour, is Shevna is the target of divine wrath here to such a point that he's the only individual God targets. All the other passages here are this nation is bad, this nation is bad, this nation is bad, this one's going to fall, this one's going to fall, this one's going to fall, and there's one person who earns that kind of direct wrath, and that's this fellow Shevna. Why? And I think it's because he embodies the selfish corruption of the aristocracy of Yerushalayim. And especially if he is a self-enriching Kohen Gadol, or a self-enriching Talmid Chacham, who is using a religious position as an instrument towards greater power. That's why you see him get this kind of treatment here. Also worth noting, this whole stretch of chapters, all of these prakim we've been talking about, are about not looking to alliances and strategies, but looking to God instead. He is the epitome of someone who is strategizing for his own survival instead of looking to God. Are we somewhat clear on this?
No.
I feel like...
Somewhat, I agree with.
You know what? I had this idea the other day, and I think I'm going to start doing it. And I'm not going to quiz everybody with it. But I feel like at the end of the source sheet, I should include like three or four review questions. And people can use those for themselves to ask themselves, okay, so did I really get it? I think I want to start doing that. Yeah, I'm not going to grade it. If you turn it in, I will not answer. I'm not looking for more work. But I think it might be a good way to help make sure that you got something out of it. It would be review questions. But the point here is Shevna embodies everything that Yeshaya has come to criticize. He is going to try to take advantage of the Assyrian invasion for himself, and that's why he gets this treatment from Yeshaya. Whether it's two Shevnas, which is one way to read it, that's that's one read, or whether it's one Shevna, whether the order is 22 then 36 or 36 and then 22, that's the key point that you need to draw from this. Clear? Someone?